Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Rights of Criminal Suspects Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On February 23rd and 24th, 2010, the Supreme Court announced its decisions in Florida v. Powell and Maryland v. Schatzer, respectively. The question in Florida v. Powell was whether the warnings the defendant received before interrogation adequately conveyed his right to the presence of an attorney during questioning, which is a right that was established in Miranda v. Arizona. The question in Maryland v. Schatzer was whether Edwards v. Arizona, which bars police from initiating questioning with criminal suspects who have invoked their right to counsel, applies to an interrogation that takes place 3 years later. In Florida v. Powell, Justice Ginsburg delivered the opinion of the court, which Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Scalia, Kennedy, Thomas Alito, and Sotomayor joined in its entirety, and which Justice Breyer joined in part. The court held that advising a suspect that he has the right to talk to a lawyer before answering any of the law enforcement officer's questions, and that he can invoke that right at any time during the questioning, satisfies Miranda. Justice Stevens filed a dissenting opinion, which Justice Breyer joined in part. In Maryland v. Schatzer, Justice Scalia delivered the opinion of the court, which Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Kennedy, Ginsburg, Breyer, Alito, and Sotomayor joined. The court held that because Schatzer experienced a break in Miranda custody lasting more than 2 weeks between the first and second attempts at interrogation, Edwards v. Arizona does not mandate the suppression of Schatzer's later statements. Justice Thomas joined Part 3 of the opinion of the court and also filed an opinion concurring in part and concurring in the judgment. Justice Stevens filed an opinion concurring in the judgment. To discuss these cases, we have Indiana University Maurer School of Law Professor Craig M. Bradley. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Bradley.
What I'm about to present will appear in the June issue of Trial Magazine, published by the American Association for Justice, formerly the American Trial Lawyers Association. This podcast is about two small Miranda decisions, Florida v. Powell and Maryland v. Schatzer. In these cases, the Supreme Court decided two rather technical issues about the Miranda warnings that are worthy of about half a podcast each, and thus are the subject of one whole and, I hope, intellectually nutritious podcast here. In Powell, the police warned the suspect prior to custodial interrogation as follows. You have a right to remain silent. If you give up the right to remain silent, anything you say can be used against you in court. You have the right to talk to a lawyer before answering any of our questions. If you cannot afford to hire a lawyer, one will be appointed for you without cost and before any questioning. You have the right to use any of these rights at any time you want during the interview. Following this warning, the defendant confessed to the crime with which he was charged. He was convicted, but on appeal, the Florida Court of Appeals held that his confession should have been suppressed because the warnings did not, quote, adequately inform Powell of his right to have an attorney present throughout the interrogation, unquote. The Florida Supreme Court agreed with this holding. The court found that the advice Powell received was misleading because it suggested that Powell could, quote, only consult with an attorney before questioning, unquote, and did not convey Powell's entitlement to counsel's presence throughout the interrogation. The Supreme Court reversed by a vote of 7-2 on this issue. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg wrote the opinion. She began by quoting the relevant language of Miranda. A suspect must be warned prior to any questioning, one, that he has a right to remain silent, two, that anything he says can be used against him in a court of law, three, that he has the right to the presence of an attorney, and four, that if he cannot afford an attorney, one will be appointed for him prior to any questioning if he so desires. The court pointed out that, quote, the four warnings that Miranda requires are invariable, comma, but the court has not dictated the words in which the essential information must be conveyed, unquote. California v. Prysock and Duckworth v. Egan were particularly relevant. In Prysock, the suspect was informed, among other things, of a right to have a lawyer present during questioning and his right to counsel appointed at no cost. However, the Court of Appeals held the advice inadequate to comply with Miranda because it lacked an express statement that the appointment of an attorney would occur prior to the impending interrogation. The court disagreed, finding the warnings adequate. In Duckworth, the suspect was advised of his right to an attorney and to an appointed attorney, but was also informed that the lawyer would be appointed, open quote, if and when the suspect goes to court, unquote. The Court of Appeals thought that the if and when you go to court language suggested that only those accused who can afford an attorney have the right to have one present before answering any questions. The Supreme Court disagreed, holding that the if and when you go to court advice, quote, simply anticipated, unquote, a question that the suspect might be expected to ask after receiving his Miranda warnings, that is, when will he obtain counsel? The court reached the same conclusion in this case. Quote, the Tampa officers did not, quote, entirely admit, unquote, any information Miranda required them to impart. They informed Powell that he had the, quote, right to talk to a lawyer before answering any of their questions, unquote, and, quote, the right to use any of his rights at any time he wanted during the interview, unquote. The first statement committed that Powell could consult with a lawyer before answering any particular questions, and the second statement confirmed that he could exercise that right while interrogation was underway. In combination, the warnings reasonably convey Powell's right to have an attorney present, not only at the outset of interrogation, but at all times. While I've always been dubious about Duckworth, to anyone but an eagle-eyed liberal lawyer, the warnings in this case seem perfectly adequate. The notion that the suspect might parse them in some unlikely way seems far-fetched. Even to the unusual suspect who was listening to his warnings with rapt attention, these warnings conveyed all Miranda required him to know, including the misleading information that he has a right to an attorney, when in fact the police are under no obligation to actually provide one. But this is the holding of Miranda. Justice Stevens, joined by Justice Breyer, dissented for the reasons given by the Florida courts. Justice Stevens also argued alone that there was an independent and adequate state ground for the Florida decision. In Maryland v. Schatzer, the court, rather than essentially reiterating old decisions, as in Powell, faced a new issue: whether and under what circumstances a suspect's protections under Edwards v. Arizona can expire. Schatzer arose as follows. When Paul Schatzer was imprisoned for Crime A, he was interrogated about Crime B by a police detective in a small room within the prison. After receiving his Miranda rights as to Crime B, he asserted that he did not want to talk without counsel. The interrogation ceased and he was returned to the general prison population. 2.5 years later, after further evidence developed as to Crime B, he was reinterrogated by a different detective at the prison. This time, he signed a written waiver form, gave incriminating statements, submitted to a polygraph examination, and gave further incriminating statements after that. He was convicted after a motion to suppress the statements was denied. However, the Maryland Court of Appeals reversed his conviction. The Maryland court assumed that there was a, quote, break in custody exception, unquote, to the Miranda rule. That holds that once a suspect asserts his right to counsel, interrogation must cease. However, the court held that continued incarceration in prison did not constitute such a break in custody. While there was some quibbling within the Supreme Court, it unanimously disagreed with this conclusion of the Maryland Court of Appeals. Justice Antonin Scalia wrote an opinion joined by 6 other justices. First, the court agreed with the Maryland Court of Appeals' assumption that there is a break in custody exception to Edwards. In the paradigm case of an Edwards violation, the suspect asserts his right to counsel, and the police either ignore that assertion or pause briefly and then resume questioning. Under these circumstances, quote, it is easy to believe that a suspect may be coerced or badgered into abandoning his earlier refusal to be questioned without counsel. However, if the police stop questioning the suspect and release him from custody, he will see that his assertion of the right to counsel had an impact. If he is then re-questioned after a substantial period of time during which he is free, he will not feel badgered, but will instead realize that assertion of the right to counsel works, at least in the sense that he can make questioning stop, even if the police don't actually provide him with counsel. But the court, aware that it was making rules for lower courts and police to follow, felt that it must specify what constituted an adequate break in custody. Consequently, it settled on a period of 14 days. Quote, "That provides plenty of time for the suspect to get reacclimated to his normal life, to consult with friends and counsel, and to shake off any residual coercive effects of his prior custody," unquote. In his concurrence in the result, Justice Stevens argued that 14 days was not long enough for an absolute cutoff of Edwards' rights, and in a separate concurring opinion, Justice Thomas thought that 14 days was too long. But the listener may be saying, Schatzer was not released from custody. He was in prison the whole time. Herein lies the second issue in this case, and the one that led the Maryland Court of Appeals to reverse his conviction. But the Supreme Court held that, quote, "Without minimizing the harsh realities of incarceration, we think lawful imprisonment imposed on conviction of a crime does not create the coercive pressures identified in Miranda," unquote. The suspect realizes that he is under the control of the prison authorities, not the police, who are questioning him about a crime different from the crime for which he is imprisoned. Quote, "Sentenced prisoners, in contrast to the Miranda paradigm, are not isolated with their accusers. They live among other inmates, guards, and workers, and often can receive visitors and communicate with people on the outside by mail or telephone." In short, the fact that the suspect is incarcerated for another crime in prison does not render him in continuous custody for Miranda purposes. But since he is invariably taken to an isolated area in the prison for police questioning, that questioning does take place in custody and requires Miranda warnings. This seems a reasonable result. It affirms the unanimous view of lower courts that there is a break-in custody exception to Edwards, and it establishes a clear rule that break-in custody must be at least 14 days. This avoids the possibility that the police might release an Edwards defendant and then immediately re-arrest him and question him further. Finally, the notion that a return to the general prison population constitutes a release from custody for Miranda purposes is sensible and avoids the problem that any prisoner who asserted his Miranda rights would be immune from questioning the entire time that he remains in prison. If there is to be a break-in custody exception, then it should apply to suspects who happen to be in prison as well as those who don't.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.